this Knifeheads podcast, Margot Kingston delivers a speech to the Australian Whistleblowers Association following her arrest for locking on to logging equipment in the Boulder Forest and a piece she wrote about the experience for the Saturday paper.
By accident, really, I was a mainstream media journalist from 1986 to 2005 after realising that being a commercial lawyer was not for me. I began at Brisbane's Courier Mail 3 years before the defeat of the Country Party-dominated coalition government that had ruled Queensland since 1957 and 18 years into the premiership of Trump prototype Sir Joe Bjelke-Petersen. I suppose there's so many people who are too young to remember this, but I'll never forget, I grew up in it.
Unfortunately, I wasn't.
Power was so entrenched that business, police, the public service, government ministers, and even elements of the judiciary were corrupt and effectively unaccountable. Sir Joe's rural gerrymandered meant he won big without the popular vote. I moved to Fairfax after writing two stories taken from Queensland Law Society, the Queensland Law Society Journal reports on shameless findings by our sham police compliance tribunal. Those stories triggered a whistleblower from the Builders Registration Board giving me documents revealing horrific political intervention by government ministers to stop disciplinary action against dodgy home builders. It was my first real scoop, and all hell broke loose in State Parliament. Fairfax's Brisbane Bureau noticed, and I joined the now defunct Times on Sunday as the second Queensland reporter. In May 1987, an explosive Four Corners report, empowered by whistleblowers, exposed rampant police corruption enabling illegal brothels and gambling dens. Acting Premier Bill Gunn, Sir Joe was trying to run for Canberra then, so he sort of let Bill have the job, ordered a royal commission headed by former Federal Court Judge Tony Fitzgerald after his preferred pick, Police Complaints Tribunal Head Judge Pratt, was stridently opposed by the legal profession and journalists. I reported the Fitzgerald Royal Commission, which began with evidence from a former brothel madam turned whistleblower and ensnared corrupt police right up to Sir Joe's hand-picked Police Commissioner Terry Lewis. Along with Lewis, four former or current National Party ministers were jailed. Queensland adopted Fitzgerald's recommendations to clean up our democracy, including the establishment of a Crime and Misconduct Commission, and in 1989, voters elected a Labor government. My job was to write a feature on what happened each week and report a scoop. Easy, really, since many former police officers who tried to be clean cops and suffered for it were giddy with relief that truth was finally heard and happy to chat. The highlight of my career is an exclusive interview of Tony Fitzgerald, and he is my number one hero in public life. Susie Russell is a close friend who lives on the Boulder Plateau, south of the Comboyne Plateau, where I live. She's fought with intelligence and passion for decades to protect New South Wales state forests. Early last year, I agreed to report her local Elands community campaign to stop logging in the Boulder State Forest. New South Wales Forestry Corporation, a company wholly owned by the New South Wales government, was determined to meet its native logging supply contracts despite the devastating loss of state forest habitat in the 2019 bushfires. So I tweeted peaceful direct actions, including lock-ons to timber mill gates and tree sits, and published campaign stories on my citizen journalist website, NoFibs. The dream was to encourage the coalition government or Labor to pledge to end native forest logging before the New South Wales election. And Ellenborough Falls camping grounds close to town became campaign headquarters and numbers swelled. Then a police inspector visited to say the camp would break up because Forestry Corporation had decided to suspend bulk forest logging. Instead, citizens began direct action against logging in the nearby Yarratt State Forest, where Forestry Corporation was unused to organise protest. That's when I first saw that my naive belief that the government's regional forest agreement goals of sustainable logging in sustainable state native forests was a myth. It was clear fell, a degradation of native forests that could never recover. The next shock, Forestry Corporation was lawless, save for way after the fact fines by the Environmental Protection Authority for breaches of environmental laws largely exposed by citizens. Why? Unlike other states, New South Wales law bans anyone outside the government suing Forestry Corporation to enforce the law. I want to read, this is very long and involved, but it's very important to me. I want to read NoFib's February 2023 piece reporting my housemate's creative citizens whistleblower experiment. My lesson in Forestry Corp's trashing of the rule of law and good governance began when Inspector Moody from Taree Police Station announced to Safe Boulder Forest protesters in the Yarrup State Forest that Forestry Corp had just closed the entire Yarrup State Forest for 6 months until August 7th, so it was now unlawful to cross its boundaries. Someone asked if that included public roads. Yes, he replied. There was talk among campaigners that locals would be upset as there were two public roads in the forest. I expected the forest closure to make local news and harm the campaign. But no local media reported the news, and Live Traffic New South Wales did not advise motorists of the public road closure. I reread the closure notice and looked again at the map. Quote, to be clear, the closed area includes all roads and trails that physically occur within the legal boundary of Yarrup State Forest. My housemate had become a camp kitchen helper. She'd never been involved in anything like this before and thought that as a resident, she'd ring the local Forestry Corp office for clarification. Could she have a picnic in the forest or drive through to visit someone? He looked up the partial closure public advisory on the site. Yes, she could do both. Just follow the logging operation signs. But what about the closure notice? He read it and said he'd get back to her. He called back to say the office was having a meeting to discuss the matter, then rang again to say he'd updated the public advisory. Quote, the whole of the forest is closed and all roads and trails within those boundaries are off limits, he said, and she'd have to find alternative routes to visit people. What about the residents who live within the forest boundary? They should have been contacted and would have permission to enter certain areas, he replied. So she rang the Mid-North Coast Council. Had it been notified of the closure of two public roads? They looked up their road alerts. Nothing. They'd get back to her. She then discovered that the forestry closure would deny people their only access to the Brimbin Nature Reserve for 6 months. She phoned the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service. Had Forestry Corp informed them as required? No, there was no traveller's alert on its website. It would get back to her. She rang the council again to advise that Forestry Corp had just told her to close the forest public roads. The officer looked up the closure notice and confirmed Forestry Corp had not given it an alert as required. After being put on hold, the officer said her manager had just spoken to Forestry Corp's liaison officer and was told that public roads were open, but it was illegal to stop your vehicle in the forest. Huh? Meanwhile, I called the New South Wales Environment and Heritage Department media office to ask if it was legal for Forestry Corp to ban access to a nature reserve. And would the minister direct it to exempt travellers to the reserve? She'd get back to me. A few hours later, a different Warhope Forestry Corp officer rang my friend. He said a team was working on a new closure order to exempt through traffic on public roads, but it would be illegal to pull over in the forest. At 9 p.m, the department emailed this quote from New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife. Brimbin Nature Reserve is open, and the access road to it is also open and has not been closed. Next morning, Forestry Corporation published a new closure notice. It did not say it had changed the order or what the differences were. Instead, it retained the now false total closure advisory, which now led to the new contradictory closure notice. The public roads were not open, as Forestry Corp told Council and New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife. Quote, to be clear, the closed area includes various roads and trails that physically occur within the legal boundaries of Yarrup State Forest. which are closed to all but through vehicle traffic. Vehicles must not stop or linger along these roads and trails. Forestry Corp did not issue a press release informing residents of changes to their legal rights in the forest and penalties for breach, either when they closed the forest or when they changed its terms. So I contact the Environment Department media to ask whether it will issue an alert warning travellers not to stop their vehicle in the forest on the way to Brimbin. They get back to me. In summary, Forestry Corp issued a sham closure notice and made sure only protesters would face arrest and fines if they entered the public's forest and that others wouldn't. It wanted unfettered power to reject, arrest and fine people it didn't like the look of while not inconveniencing other locals. The local Forestry Corporation didn't get the con, read the notice and took it seriously. When Council and New South Wales National Parks asked why they weren't informed, Forestry Corporation lied, then changed the order. Although contrary to what it told them, the roads remained closed with an exception of through traffic that didn't stop. Forestry Corp either lied to the police or police were in on the lie. No wonder Forestry Corp bosses don't give interviews and put out blather statements instead. Sorry, I find this terribly upsetting. It's the lawyer in me, I guess. Camp members decided to test Forestry Corp and the police by organising a walk through the forest in defiance of the latest forest closure notice. I checked Forestry Corp's website the day before our walking to find it issued yet another 6-month total forest closure notice, perhaps after the walking was publicised on Facebook. Now, instead of an exemption for entry for through vehicle traffic which did not stop, now the forest was closed, quote, to all but authorised vehicles, unquote. Nothing on how to get authorisation. I got lost getting to the meeting place and ended up braving Rufus Guts trails in the Yarra. We passed several loggers in their utes, as did several other cars without authorisation. The forest was not closed, never has been. It's a bad faith abuse of power to tell protesters they better leave or be arrested for being in a closed forest, as police did, while locals, Traffic New South Wales, councils, public roads and the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Services nature reserves would be off limits for 6 months are not told. After queries by the Council and National Parks about why they weren't issued alerts about the first total forest closure, Forestry Corp lied to them that the Yarra was not closed. That game is a blatant abuse of power. I did law a long time ago, but surely a body given legal power to close the public's forest cannot just pretend to exercise it to arbitrarily target people without any legal authority. There were no police present for our walk. Forestry Corp officers issued no direction to leave the closed forest. It was only when we neared a real road closure just in front of actual logging operations that it told us legally to go no further or be arrested for a serious offence and face personal danger. So why no police and why no arrests? Three possibilities I can think of. Have Tari police worked out that Forestry Corp lied to them and that the courts would throw out any charges? Has Forestry Corp been told by the New South Wales government to lie low before the election? Or does Forestry Corp know it's been caught red-handed blatantly abusing legal power without any consequences, of course? I'd angsted for a week on whether to risk arrest by joining the walk into live tweet it and wrote a piece to explain to myself why I'd do it again. What? I was 18, the first and only time I did something expecting to be arrested. October 22, 1977, I joined other students at Queensland University to go to King George Square in Brisbane CBD. Engineering students rained water balloons down on us as we left the campus. 5,000 protesters gathered on the square, 700 police occupied the street facing us, and a large crowd formed an amphitheatre around the protagonists. Like 417 others, I stepped onto the road and was put in Boggo Road lockup. Chock-a-block, like there must have been about 25 women in there. While my southern peers were on the streets marching for women's and gay rights, we were fighting to be allowed onto the streets. After Premier Sir John Peterson announced in September, quote, "The day of the political street march is over. Anybody who holds a street march, spontaneous or otherwise, will know they're acting illegally. Don't bother applying for a march permit. You won't get one. That's government policy now." I was a loner born and bred in country, uninvolved in organised politics, although I bought the Southern Papers, the National Times and the National Review for news on Queensland's police state. My father strongly supported Sir Joe, saying, quote, "He gets things done," unquote. My mother didn't talk about politics, but told me many years later she voted Labor. In the cell, women rang, sang Solidarity Forever. I'd never heard of the song, and I wondered what I'd got myself into. My mother picked me up after a cocktail party in my battered old student, Black Hillman. She's a two-glass sleeper, so limits herself to one glass of wine when she drinks it all. As we turned the corner from the jail, police pulled us over and told Mum she was driving erratically, her speech was slurred, and she had to blow into the random breath testing machine. She held me back from jumping out and blowing up, alighted and faced the cop. "Excuse me, young man, you must be mistaken." He said she had a faulty tail light and should get it fixed. I knew then that I'd done the right thing, and so did Mum. She said she was proud of me, and I felt proud of myself. Something had to be done, and I had to do my bit. But once was enough. Until now. Like Queensland's police under Sir Joe, the rule of law has collapsed in New South Wales state forests. With the connivance of government and shut eye by government agencies. It was clear felling in native forests, breaking it down, annihilating habitat for koalas and other endangered native animals who'd lost their homes when the 2019-20 bushfires destroyed 64% of New South Wales native state forests, 700,000 hectares. Elands was evacuated in those fires, and Susie and some other locals fought for 3 weeks to save her home and others. The Guardian, thanks to a whistleblower, reported in November 2021 that the New South Wales government had ignored and kept secret the post-fire report from its Natural Resources Commission that it had commissioned. The Natural Resources Commission recommended the suspension of harvesting for a minimum of 3 years in three native forest zones at extreme risk: Naruma and Nowra on the south coast and Taree on the mid-north coast, Yarrat State Forest, Lawn State Forest. Because, quote, "there is a risk of serious and irreversible harm to environmental values from the cumulative impacts of fire and harvesting. In six high-risk forests, 75% should not be logged." Government response, no comment. Pre-election, I think the election was March last year, the government and Labor studiously ignored the Commission's December 2022 report, warning in stark terms that native forests were degrading so fast they would become net emitters of carbon and threaten water quality without, quote, "major intervention," unquote. It urged government to avoid business as usual approaches, saying this would result in, quote, "suboptimal outcomes at best, or ecosystem and industry collapse under worst case scenarios." Get this. Forestry Corporation, New South Wales taxpayers, lose millions of dollars a year from native forest logging. And what's the product of native forest harvesting? A little bit of hardwood timber for flooring for the wealthy, and most of it, wood chips and firewood. At the Action at Pentark Forestry's Herons Creek Native Forest Timber Mill, I saw a huge truck waiting to collect native forest wood chips. Slogan, ANL, Australian Native Landscapes. No. Climate change abatement, water quality protection, saving endangered native animals, saving money after a just transition for the 1,000-odd workers directly employed, tourism promotion of the regions, so many reasons to stop before it's too late. There's no reason to keep doing this except raw politics with closed eyes, big parties oblivious to their duty to be stewards of our nation and its people. The National Party owns the seats affected and is in bed with the loggers and will allow no change except to further strengthen anti-protest laws. The Labor Party will not buck CFMEU. All the evidence says no. Power and money politics says yes. So yes, I'll take a personal stand on this. I'll overcome my fear for the second time. It has to be done, and I want to do my bit. Although we postponed logging in the Mulga State Forest, we haven't had any success with either rival for government. Instead, just before calling the election, the Coalition signed new 5-year logging contracts with timber mills with the same supply requirements. Oh. Sorry if that was a bit boring, but I used to sort of get the, you know, you all know what's about, don't you? Just like that last guy, you know, Department of Agriculture. I got involved again in the Save Bulga Forest campaign this August when Forestry Corporation published its plan to resume logging the Bulga State Forest from October 1. There'd already been yet another scandal. Greater gliders had been declared endangered by the New South Wales government, which required a 50 metre radius around greater glider dead trees. Wouldn't you know it, Forestry Corp, not the New South Wales Environment Protection Agency, had the job of finding greater glider dens. Elsewhere in other state forests, forest activists learned that Forestry Corporation was searching for the nocturnal greater glider and found them. Gliders come out after dusk. Later, after after you know, partial action by the Environmental Protection Authority, Forestry Corp surveyed a fraction of the Bulga State Forest to be logged, reporting 2 den trees. Citizen scientists, whistleblowers, spent many evenings visiting the forest from dusk for 3 hours, spotlighting, and discovered that the Bulga was a refuge for greater gliders. Endangered. Documenting 23 den trees and counting until Forestry Corp closed the forest pre-logging. But the Environmental Protection Agency sent no one to ensure no breaches, leaving, if the past is any guide, citizens to inspect the area after logging and report breaches to the EPA. I attended 2 spotlighting sessions, one with Sophie Scrops, the Community Independent MP for the North Shore seat of McKellar, organised by a fellow Comboyne resident, Ken Henry. Ken is the former Secretary of the Treasury, who've worked for Paul Keating and Peter Costello. He now chairs the Australian Climate and Biodiversity Foundation to try and make an account for nature, and helped secure the federal government's recent decision to work up a system whereby protecting state native forests would earn big money as carbon offsets for polluters. The Elands community plan was to delay logging as long as possible in hope of a miracle. So each night someone would lock onto the massive harvester on site with a bicycle lock and await police rescue to arrive to cut off the lock. Each hour delayed was 50 trees saved. As arrests mounted, the first global nature repair conference hosted by the Australian and New South Wales governments began in Sydney. It was no surprise New South Wales Minister Penny Sharp was a no-show. Ken informed me later that New South Wales had an elaborate scheme of environmental offsets for developers, but had exempted Forestry Corporation from the requirements. I attended a Save Bulga Forest campaign meeting on Tuesday, October 8, when we just about run out of people to log on and delay logging. Campaign leader Susie asked if anyone could log on next day, and I heard myself saying I could do it Thursday. The next day, I saw that Susie had logged on, meaning she had done the The deed, knowing she would no longer be legally allowed to enter the forest until after her court case under standing bail conditions. The Tuareg police played hardball to strangle the campaign. They refused bail and put her in jail for the night. The next day, a magistrate released her on standard bail conditions. I got the call. It really was my turn. So I crossed the line from a reporter of citizens engaging in civil disobedience to doing it myself. The experience was deeply distressing, and after 36 hours of sleep, I was in shock. The Guardian reported Susie's and my arrest, our latest campaign's first mention in mainstream media, which triggered forest campaigners from around the state to come to Elands to lock on. The next day, the editor of the Saturday paper, for whom I'd written three articles on the Independence Day movement during the 2022 election, emailed a request for a piece on my arrest. It had to be done, and I did it, although I'd only begun the process of working out why I'd been prepared to die after police rescue warned I was at significant risk of death or catastrophic injury if I didn't tell them where the keys were to avoid the angle grinder. Then Cynthia Cardell sent an email to No Fibs saying she thought I was a whistleblower and could I speak to Whistleblowers Australia's annual conference. So here I am. A postscript memo of in May this year, the New South Wales Court of Appeal said that the New South Wales legislative ban on third-party suits against Forestry Corporation had failed to abolish common law standing for the South East Forest Rescue to seek an injunction restraining Forestry Corporation from logging certain areas until they complied with New South Wales environmental laws. That would cripple Forestry Corporation, so it sought leave to appeal to the High Court. On September 5, the High Court granted leave on condition that Forestry Corp taxpayers pay the legal costs of South East Forest Rescue. Let's hope our highest court decides to restore the rule of law in the people's native forests, New South Wales.
Thank you for listening and hope you enjoyed this No Fibs podcast. Until next time, goodbye.